The Monologue.
Obviously, homelessness is impacting us in significant ways, regardless of where you live, whether it's Seattle or Tacoma or Everett, you're getting hit with this. Bellingham's getting hit, Puyallup, Olympia, everyone's getting hit with homelessness. And the cities that tackle it in the right way, by actually tackling it, see results. Bellevue, for example, says, hey, guess what? As a city, we're not going to allow you to camp out in our parks. We'll help you. We'll do what we can. Marysville, same thing. And they've seen results. King County was put in a position that they would be compelled to sweep some of these encampments that get dangerous. In fact, the way a proposal was written and supported by Reagan Dunn, King County Council member, and Kathy Lambert, outgoing King County Council member, made it very clear. We're going to set standards for removing homeless encampments. It set conditions for removing them if they pose health or safety hazards, or if they block public resources. There were also in this bill guidelines for when a camp would not be removed. As in, hey, we don't have any place for these folks, so we're not going to just move the encampment. And yet this bill was denied. It didn't even get to a full council vote. It didn't get out of a hearing, a committee. Because the Democrats on the King County Council said, we're not interested. We're going to let these encampments develop where they develop, and we're not really going to get in the way. This is obviously the wrong move. Obviously, Reagan Dunn is annoyed. Kathy Lambert is annoyed. Kathy Lambert, who is now going to be replaced with a far-to-the-left Seattle-style progressive, making the King County Council as bad as the Seattle City Council. It's going to continue to happen unless we make some really significant changes. And you had the opportunity to make a significant change, or at least prevent a significant change, and voters didn't do it. Not in King County, not in this district where Kathy Lambert ends up losing. This is going to continue to happen and happen again and happen again some more until you get more involved. Ultimately, it's going to be up to you. I can try to tell you to get more involved and vote. I can tell you to contact friends, and some of you will, and a lot of you did in this last election. We saw some significant wins here in Washington State. Even in Seattle, we saw wins where we never thought we would. That should inspire, but it can't just be sort of rough shot, right? It can't just be, well, we're going to get inspired in some places in Seattle. We're going to get inspired in Puyallup or Redmond. We're going to get super inspired in Bothell or Des Moines. But we're going to give it a pass a little bit in Carnation or Duval. And we're going to sit this one out in Tacoma. It doesn't work that way. All of us have to get together, because one victory in Seattle doesn't negate the pain and suffering in Federal Way with a loss. Folks on the left want to talk about how compassionate they are over and over and over again. They are the most compassionate when it comes to homelessness. They're not going to move anyone because that lacks compassion. Compassion, compassion, compassion. They say it a bunch of times, thinking as if them saying it means that they will actually show it. But their compassion is killing people. Their compassion is killing people. By not sweeping these encampments, they're keeping people living out on the streets where they will eventually die. People who in large part are dealing with a mental health issue that's going unaddressed, or an addiction that's going unaddressed. And every day that they remain outside is another day that makes it easier for them to ultimately give in to what will lead to their death. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk with a formerly homeless person who came in contact with the group We Heart Seattle. Formerly homeless. Because she knew it was on the line, and it took a non-governmental agency to get through to her. I can't wait for that conversation.
The interview.
Oh, surprise, surprise. Earlier this morning, the Snohomish County Council introduced a proposal that would raise the sales tax in the county to fund additional subsidized housing projects. And it seems like this is being fast-tracked into a vote, meaning they don't want you to really know about it. Joining me on the line is Snohomish County Council member Nate Nehring. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jason. Thanks so much for having me on.
Take us through this proposal.
So essentially, there's a proposal that's been introduced this morning that would raise the countywide sales tax rate by a tenth of a percent with the purpose of funding additional taxpayer-subsidized housing. There are several issues with this. I mean, the underlying merits of raising taxes for that sort of thing, I think, should be questioned. But one of my biggest concerns right now is that this is being rushed through with minimal transparency. Typically, something like this would go to a vote of the people for a proper, for a sales tax increase. If not, it's going to be done councilmatically thanks to a loophole carve-out that was created by the state legislature a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of the council vote itself, it's being rushed through, and it's going to be taken the last meeting before Christmas, which is way quicker than it would regularly happen. And so I have a lot of concerns about the process that's being used to pass this in addition to the tax itself.
Well, you know my stance on why the process is the way it is. What's your take as you work with these people?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that this was introduced right after the election and the plan is to pass it the last meeting before Christmas. I think it's to minimize the amount of public input that's received, to minimize deliberation. And I think that's just wrong. I think when you're doing something, you know, any sort of government action, but particularly something with the amount of gravity as this, that's projected to raise over $100 million in taxes over the next 5 years, I think you should be taking extra time to deliberate on it, to get as much public input as possible, and to really be thoughtful and careful with the decision that's being made. And so it's really disappointing to see this being rushed through in this manner.
My assumption is that this has the votes in the Snohomish County Council to move forward. This likely wouldn't have been raised the way that it was if it didn't. What's the plan to push back? Is it to shine a giant spotlight on this so that folks can actually reach out to the county council?
So my assumption is that this has the votes, that the tax will have support on a 3-2 party line vote would be my guess. What my goal is going to be, I'm currently working on drafting an amendment which would say that this needs to be placed on a ballot so that the people of Snohomish County, the voters, can have a say on whether they want their sales tax rate to be increased for this purpose or not. I think there's a chance, you know, with enough public input, people reaching out, that we can get that amendment through, and that would allow this to go for a vote, and then, you know, everybody can have a say on it rather than just being done councilmatically in this rush process. So that's my hope, is that we can at least get that amendment through.
And that means folks need to actually reach out to Megan Dunn and Stephanie Wright and Jared Mead, making sure that your voices are heard. They think they're going to get away with this because you're not going to know about it. So folks who are listening right now in Snohomish County, you have to make sure, figure out who your council member actually is, and reach out to them. And so if you are represented by Jared Mead, you know that you can email and call and say, no, 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 no. We back this idea of actually putting it on a ballot. Make sure you're supporting Nate Nearing's amendment. We're aware of what you're doing. You're not going to get away with it, Megan Dunn. How meaningful that kind of activism is, just literally picking up the phone and making a 30-second phone call.
I think it's critical. It's so rare, especially in local government, that we hear from people on these important issues. And so anytime people speak out, I think people really take it to heart. I know personally for myself, when I hear from my constituents on an issue, you know, either supporting or opposing, I really take that to heart, and I take it into consideration when I'm making a decision. And so I think that's so important. And one way, if you're interested in reaching out and sharing your thoughts on this specific proposal, if you email contact.council@snowco.org, that'll be sent to all 5 council members. So just a note there if you're interested.
Say that one more time.
contact.council@snowco.org.
It's really simple. That's how people can actually make a difference. And it literally will take you maybe a minute to send an email, maybe a minute to pick up that phone and make a phone call. Just talk directly to your council. And if you don't, well, guess what? You're going to get hit with a sales tax increase, and Megan Dunn, Stephanie Wright, Jared Mead, all county council members are going to likely do something like this again. Now, obviously, Nate Nearing, Sam Lowe, they're on our side on this one. So make sure that you are spending some time contacting Megan Dunn, Stephanie Wright, Jared Mead. And of course, as Nate just said, you can contact the entire Snohomish County Council. Councilmember Nearing, thank you so much, as always, for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, Jason.
Absolutely. Now this.
The monologue.
There's an interesting development in the potential for government shutdown on Friday or Friday after midnight, Saturday morning, where the government has to come up with a stopgap budget or everything gets closed. And you've got a wing of the Republican Party, the Freedom Caucus, plotting a partial closure. Now, generally speaking, when a party does this, regardless of who's doing it, whichever party it is, there is some significant pushback, in part because no one really understands how the whole thing works. They generally understand, oh, you've got to pass a budget so you can pay to keep the shop going. But they really don't understand the intricacies of this. And it doesn't really make sense to a lot of people, understandably, because we have the same conversation pretty much every single few, three, 4 months. Because they never actually get this done and pass a full budget where we are, you know, living within our means. But in this case, it's going to be kind of interesting because it's the Freedom Caucus deciding to do this as a way to stop the Biden mandate against private businesses. Now, this report came out today from Politico, and it said that a group of conservatives, and by the way, it's not just the Freedom Caucus because it's also happening on the Senate side, but they're planning to object to a quick consideration of a continuing resolution, the CR, one that would allow them to just kick the can down the road again on funding. They say we won't stop it if the Democrats agree to deny money to enforce the mandate. So they're basically saying you cannot spend any money enforcing this mandate, which would technically keep the mandate in place, but would mean that it wouldn't be pursued, which would mean they're not going, the federal government via OSHA is not going to force businesses to fire either the ones who are unvaccinated or ones who just don't want to show their COVID vaccination card. I don't know how much that changes this debate. I'm very curious if this then gains some traction. It's very clearly unpopular, this mandate. That's why so many people are saying, no, I'm not going to do it. And that's why the Biden administration is getting a little bit nervous as to its impact. That's why they also said they were not going to make any moves until at least after Christmas. Now, at the same time, of course, you've got judges weighing in saying this is unconstitutional. I mean, you look at the one judge out of Missouri basically saying you didn't provide any evidence, Biden administration, as to why this is even necessary. None. And so it was put on pause. Now, ultimately, we don't know how it's going to go. Ultimately, I believe it's going to go to the Supreme Court, but that's not going to happen anytime soon. How will the Democrats take this on? Democrats have to know that in certain districts, this is not a popular mandate, especially those who are vulnerable going into the midterm elections. How would Kim Schreier vote on that? Well, let's not go crazy. She's a doctor, if you didn't know that. So she takes COVID very seriously. She, of course, would side with the Democrat establishment on this. But I don't know. It's kind of an interesting strategy.
The interview.
Ballard is getting its own soccer team. It's founded by former Sounders FC winger Lamar Nagel. It will be a part of the USL League 2's Northwest Division in the Western Conference. And anytime we get a chance to talk to our friend Lamar Nagel, of course we're going to jump at it. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate you having me on.
So really cool news. You are starting this new team. It's Ballard FC. Take us through this vision. How did it become a reality?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, I played in multiple leagues, MLS, USL, PDL. I played it all in college. So this team is going to give the opportunity for college players to get more games in the year. So basically, USL 2 is in the space of what PDL was when I was playing in college. So USL 2 is for college kids during the summer, be able to play in a professional atmosphere and just really get more games and develop. When I was playing, I ended up going to Des Moines, Iowa each summer from Vegas instead of coming home to Seattle and playing because they had a great organization. Mm-hmm. And they actually won the whole USL 2 last year. So something we want to emulate, game days, supposed to be, you know, family-friendly events that bring whole community together. The idea was to create, you know, a hyper-local team that the community can rally behind and can just be a force. And so that's kind of coming to fruition.
Yeah, it's really cool news. And in a lot of ways, it's two different kinds of visions here, right? It's number one is to be that hyper-local focus where, you know, folks in the Seattle area, Ballard especially, get to watch these games. That they'll be played at Interbay Soccer Field. But on the other hand, to your point, you're getting a lot of reps for younger players who are in college right now. They'd like to get the attention of the MLS or, you know, other leagues around the globe. And this just gets them to develop their game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was the original vision, right? As soon as I was introduced to the possibility of this team, it was like, okay, an amazing place for players to develop. I didn't have that. But then, you know, then comes the community part, the community advocacy, the philanthropy that I've kind of always been involved in my career, and how can I incorporate that? And so that was the mix of kind of these two things. And then the response that we've gotten from the community has just been amazing. I think, you know, being able to be hyper-local and focused just allows us to really make a difference. And so that's it's kind of portrayed in the partners that we have and who's behind the team, and that'll all be announced, within the coming months and cultivating into that beginning of May, first game.
What I like about this on top of it is you've got a lot of kids who are getting more interested in soccer, and soccer as a league has exploded in this country in large part due to kind of getting rid of some of the misconceived notions about soccer being boring and whatnot. But on top of that, part of the reason why people know that it's no longer boring and shouldn't be perceived as boring is that, you know, football is dangerous and kids are still wanting to do something athletic, and parents look towards sport like soccer and said, well, this is considerably less dangerous. It's got some issues in its own way. But when compared to football, obviously it's not nearly as dangerous, and the culture around soccer has shifted, but these kids don't always get to go to a Sounders game, which is very expensive. In this case, you know, you're going to get tickets for like $15.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you covered a few things there. Obviously, I think soccer is a great sport for young kids to play. It's, you know, all you need is a ball and you don't even need a field, right? I grew up playing in the apartments on a street, and the speed bumps were my goal. So, but it would bring all sorts of kids together, kids I wouldn't, you know, have social contact with otherwise. And so I think it's great for the community. It's great for those kids, life skills, all that type of stuff. With, you know, the World Cup possibly coming to Seattle, 2026, that would be, you know, amazing, and another place for people to just love the sport.
So just very quickly, what's next in the timeline? Obviously, you're making some announcements coming forward, but what's your role going to be in the next few months and really the future of this?
Yeah, I keep getting that if I'm going to coach or play or anything like that. No, I'm done with that for now. I'm part owner, but I'm going to be, you know, involved in the recruiting of coaches and players. The next announcement, we do have a launch party December 9th. 6 p.m. at Rubens. So everybody's invited. And there we'll have a couple more announcements, which will be exciting. But nothing when it comes to coaches or players anytime soon, possibly in January.
Well, now that I have the in with one of the founders here, I mean, I'll point to my producer, Peyton, who is and has been a play-by-play host with the Defiance. So if you're looking for a special voice to handle any of these games, make sure that you reach out to us, because Peyton's always looking for work.
Yeah, yeah.
And if he continues to underperform in the producing side, he'll be looking for a full-time job soon. So it's actually really good for him.
Yeah, that might be good news for us.
There you go. The website, goballardfc.com, to learn more about this league, ways that if you've got, you know, college level players in your life, make sure that they're very aware of what's going on here. But also, you can buy tickets, merchandise, if you want to learn more about the launch party next week at Rubens Brews on 12/9. Again, go to goballardfc.com. Lamar, best of luck in this. I'm certain it's going to be a success because you're involved, you're attached to this, and you're a good guy who's always meant a lot to this community, and this is just another one of those ways that you're giving back. So best of luck, and we'll be in touch once the league gets going.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Again, goballardfc.com. Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Always glad to see Seattle radio host Jason Rantz.
It's always a pleasure to watch you and a pleasure now to host you.
Jason, I just love your coverage of what's been going on in Seattle.
Jason, this is as bad as it gets in America.
Jason Rantz, great to see you. Thank you.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
As the Tacoma News Tribune reported, Pierce deputies disproportionately use force against people of color. And they're citing a study that was commissioned by the Pierce County Executive's Office. It showed that use of force against black people was at more than five times the rate against white people. And when comparing Native Americans to white people, it was two times the rate. Pierce County Executive Bruce Dammeyer called it in the News Tribune a milestone in our justice reform. And said, quote, we cannot and will not ignore it. We have a lot of work to do ahead of us. So what does that work look like exactly? Joining me on the line is Executive Dammeyer. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jason. It's good to be with you today and appreciate talking about this really important subject.
It is important. I think it might be slightly important to me for at least slightly different reason. The study does not say what folks are claiming it does, not in its entirety, right? I mean, when the headline says Pierce County deputies disproportionately use force against people of color. What do the numbers say with Latinos and Asians?
So let's start, if I could, with, you know, kind of with the big picture, Jason, and that is the people of Pierce County expect our public safety system and criminal justice system in Pierce County to keep all of our communities safe,
sure,
and to be fair and just to every resident within the county. We've got to do both of those things. This specifically looks at one, and it follows up on our approach in Pierce County is to be transparent and accountable. And our criminal justice work group, which has been focusing on our criminal justice reform efforts, is led by two people from my team, the prosecutor's mm-hmm. team, the sheriff's team, and our assigned counsel. And this is their second major report, and it does show some significant things. It also doesn't show some things. One of the things that it doesn't show you, this is only the times when our deputies are using force. There are thousands of interactions with our residents where no force is ever used.
Exactly.
I did a ride along with deputies just last Monday, not a week ago Monday, from 6 p.m. to midnight. And on that shift, the deputy I was with, there was never a use of force. There was a lot of interactions with the community, a lot of help, a lot of responsiveness, but never uses of force. So
the vast majority of time when any officer in any district has a interaction with a member of the public, there is no force. I mean, in this case, we're talking about on average, because you guys looked between 2016 and 2020, the amount of use of force cases. And on average, it was about 1,750 per year. And that is relatively low in the grand scheme of things when at least you compare it to the context in which people claim use of force is occurring.
Yeah, actually, there's two. We're trying to help people to understand. There's applications of force and incidents of force. Mm-hmm. There's only about 671 times when force was used on any individual.
Yeah.
So in some cases, there might be multiple officers involved, and all that gets reported. And all of this comes from our Sheriff's Department database. So the things that you also, you know, should have noted, or I would hope our community would understand, is that the use of deadly force is exceedingly rare. Mm-hmm. Any use is too much, but it's less than 0.5%. It's less than 10 times per year in Pierce County.
Yeah.
That's significant. As you point out, I am concerned about the disproportionate use of force on our Black or African American community and to a slightly lesser degree in the amount of, as you pointed out, with our Native American. But it is interesting to notice that our Asian community and our Hispanic community, there's less on that same measure, less use of force than involving white residents.
And that's not getting any coverage whatsoever, because this report is being used to claim that the Pierce County deputies are targeting people who are black or Native American. And that's my biggest issue with this particular study. You say, and others note, that the number is disproportionate, right? Okay. Disproportionality arguments tend to be lazy because it doesn't tell you why. So what should the number be?
No, you're exactly right. The issue here is, based on the data we have, there's nothing that talks about whether the use of force was appropriate or inappropriate.
Exactly.
That's why you've got to go to the next level. And the real issue is, in similar circumstances, did deputies respond to the action, not to the race of the individual and how they were treating them and how they were responding, and in any discretionary stuff? So that's the information we don't have at this point.
But you said we cannot and will not ignore it. We have a lot of work to do ahead of us. How do you know, with respect? Because if you come back and we look at the actual cases, right, and I'm making this number up, 100% of the use of force is justified. Every single case was someone who had a gun being pointed at a child, okay? And any reasonable person would say, okay, of course you're going to use force. Well, then does disproportionality matter? Does it matter?
No, it needs to be based on the action of the individual. And in this case, because we see the disproportionality with our Black or African American community and our Native American community, we owe it to our community and to our law enforcement officers to be able to dive that next step down, to be able to go down and be able to assess the appropriateness or inappropriateness.
Why not do that first? Why not put that number out? I mean, it's only 671.
Right. It's very difficult to do with the information we have available right now. That is why the key is body-worn cameras and dash cameras, to get that objective sense of review. That's why our deputies, we have signed all the agreements to implement it here. So we're going to be starting to roll those things out. We've already purchased all the cameras. But they give, and I'll tell you, the deputies in the field want those cameras.
100%.
They believe that in the vast majority of times, the vast majority of our deputies are good deputies doing the right things for our community. They believe that that will exonerate them and explain the circumstances they were facing appropriately, better than a piece of paper in a report. So they
absolutely
are welcoming body cameras, and it will build community trust, which is also a priority for me and our deputy.
This report is being used to create more distrust. By the way, we're talking with Bruce Stammeyer, of course, the Pierce County executive. I'm looking at a quote here from a member of the Washington for Police Accountability Organization. And he told King 5, the numbers are clear. I don't know how much more you need to analyze the numbers. Now is the time to start taking action to change the culture of policing in Pierce County. This is very specifically being used to claim that the deputies are racist. Do you believe the deputies are racist based on this report?
No, we don't have enough data to determine whether the action, every action was appropriate or inappropriate, which is why we need to go to that next level.
Why not put it all out at the same time, even if it meant spending an extra 5 months, 6 months even, to get that report out? Why put out this report first when it doesn't even come close to giving the full picture?
Because part of the goal of building community trust and supporting our officers is being transparent with the community. And that's what this is designed to be, is to be transparent with the community. Yet this is our second report. We had a previous report last year that showed kind of disproportionality in arrests. Also, this is, and that we're following up. We've got to be, until we can get to the point where we know that the actions of all of our deputies are based, and we can document and prove to our community that they are all based on the actions of the alleged perpetrator, that's where we want to get. And that's why we're working. This is all part of making sure our law enforcement and deputies are accountable to our community and that have trust with our community.
But there's no reason to believe that they're not being held accountable to the community. Again, you look at this report, and I'm just looking at the report by the Tribune, right? Halfway down, they give one quick line that says Asian and Hispanic residents were not being disproportionately impacted. In fact, they just call it, they saw similar rates of use of force as white residents. That's also not true. Asians in particular had far below what, from a statistical standpoint in a study like this, what white residents were doing. So they don't say it was one time less or two times, whatever happens to be. They just say, oh, it was similar to white residents. So if cops are, and you're obviously aware of the community complaints, not just in Pierce County, but across the country, that cops are disproportionately using force against people of color. Well, number one, that's not true according to the data. And number two, if you have one or two groups that has higher than whites, but it also has higher than Asians and Hispanics, that's not going to be necessarily due to race. It could be, right? I suppose it's possible that even though you and I obviously don't think that deputies are choosing to target black people, but it also means that it could be something else. So if it turns out that the reason why, in this case, black residents are having, assuming they're residents, black residents are having a higher use of force against them, is it possible that they have a higher propensity for being in a neighborhood that's more policed? Or maybe they come from low-income neighborhoods that have a tendency to have more crime. In this case, do they happen to be the ones committing more crime than Asians, than Hispanics? And if that's the case, well, let's go ahead and try to get at that root cause. But we don't have that conversation. Instead, we're being told, well, this just shows you that cops are racist because look at the numbers. It's disproportionate. And I'll give you the last word.
So, I appreciate this conversation. It's a very important conversation, right? We need to keep our communities safe, number one, and be fair and just to all of our residents. We've got to accomplish both of those goals, and this is one of the tools. If you did look at, as I'm sure you have, looked at the entire use of force report, it was rigorous and comprehensive. I wish every resident would take the time to look at it in detail. It shows that there's that the most common use of force, and these are the definitional pieces, are kind of presence, officer presence and things like that, where you never actually touch anybody. So there's a lot in here to help our community understand the challenges and the obligations of policing. But the point, the thing we got to remember at this point is we need to be invest in keeping our community safe, not cut back. We need to provide more support for our deputies. They are willing to be held accountable. If they do something wrong, they're willing to be held accountable, and they want to earn and maintain the community's trust. That's what I find when I ride along with our Pierce County deputy.
Just very quickly, because we're running out of time, do you believe that this study shows that police are acting inappropriately, just based on this report?
There's nothing in this report that says that.
Do you believe that the community, some activists, are using this report to make that claim?
I can't really comment on that. What I know is how we want to use it, and we know that at this point there's some things in here. There's important information that comes out from this report. There's more work we have to do. Body cameras and dash cameras are going to be a key part of building both that transparency and that accountability that the people of Pierce County need.
Yeah, and on that part, no complaints or disagreements from me or from, frankly, from deputies, whether we're talking about in Pierce County or elsewhere. Body camera footage shows you that when bad faith activists claim data like this, shows you that they're targeting black people or Native Americans, but weirdly not Hispanics or Asians. I guess they're a certain kind of racist, that actually the use of force was justified. Here, look at the video. I think that backs up that claim. In all instances, no. Sometimes cops do bad things, and we should be punishing the bad cops. Unfortunately, I just, with respect, a study like this put out prematurely, in my view, because it doesn't give the reasons behind it. I think it just gives fuel to the activists who are not acting in good faith in this conversation. We could spend hours on this, but we won't. I appreciate you coming on, Pierce County Executive Bruce Dammeyer.
You bet. Thank you very much, Jason.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Now this.
The Jason Rand Show.
Jason Rantz, Seattle radio host, joins us now.
Jason, you're the perfect guest on this.
Jason Rantz, welcome back, Jason.
I see you often on other programs here.
Jason, what's going on?
Jason, thanks for coming on.
The Quick Hit.
You know, the BLM organization we know is, well, let's use the term of the left, problematic. But it's more than problematic, of course. They're racist. They're taking a racist position. And I don't care if some folks on the left feel that is a little bit too harsh when talking about BLM, because it's not harsh. For example, they're now calling for a month-long boycott of so-called white companies. So they are telling people that you shouldn't shop at companies that presumably are either owned by or run by white people. So you are being told that you should judge a business based on the skin color of the person who runs it. but we're not supposed to call that out as racist? Of course, if someone said, man, I am choosing never to go to a black-owned business because I don't like black people. Well, is that not racist? Of course it is. And yet, while we would call that out, no one seems to mind that BLM, this so-called mainstream organization that's definitely not political, no one's going to call them out in any meaningful way. On the right, we will. But on the left, no. I'd love to know whether or not those companies that during the summer of love, of all those peaceful demonstrations that definitely 100% had nothing to do with violence or destruction, I wonder if any of them are going to condemn this after pandering to BLM fringe activists and embracing BLM. I wonder if those companies are going to embrace this. I would love to know their thoughts. All those white CEOs and white managers who decided to embrace BLM because they thought it might do well for their brand. It might pander to the right kind of consumer. I wonder if you have the guts to stand up and say that this is wrong. That this is wrong. And by the way, you should listen to some of the language that they use in explaining this. They put up this Instagram post. And it reads, white supremacist capitalism uses policing to protect profits and steal black life. Skip the Black Friday sales and buy exclusively from black-owned businesses. We're dreaming of a black Xmas. That means no spending with white companies from 11/26 to 1/1 of 2022. So the national arm of the BLM movement is pushing for a boycott against white companies, which, by the way, pushing the racism aside, which this is very clearly racist, you do understand that white companies don't just employ white people, right? They employ black people and Asians and Latinos. They employ Jews and Muslims. They employ gays and trans and straights. You understand that, right? So when you go ahead and boycott a company based on a racist reason, you understand you're also hurting the black people that you want to pretend that you're supporting. You understand that, yeah? Oh, no, you don't. Not on the left. This is absurd. It's offensive. It is wrong. And everyone knows it, but too few people will call it out because they're scared. They're scared of the BLM movement. We talked about it earlier. Their polling is in the toilet. Absolute toilet. And it has been for a while because we understand what they actually stand for. And it's this garbage, this toxic garbage. And other than Fox News and on this station, I don't really see a lot of people calling it out. CNN's not going to call it out. They'll say, well, you know, maybe they have a point. I mean, I understand, we, you know, systemically racist society like ours doesn't really give its due deference to black-owned businesses. So, okay, yeah, right. Because people are choosing to go out of their way to not go to a black business. Go on your Uber Eats app. Go on your Grubhub. Go on Netflix or Amazon Prime. Go on HBO Max. There are sections specifically for black content. Not good content. We're just going to judge the content on the basis of the skin color of someone who might be behind a business or behind a movie or TV show. It is absurd. It is racist. It is wrong. And we continue to allow organizations like this to go down that pathway of separating people. That's all this does. It's divisive. It's divisive and it's wrong.
The Last Rant.
And with that, here's my take for you, or my ask, I should say. Don't judge people on the basis of skin color or religion or gender or sexuality. Just be a nice person to everyone who deserves to be treated with respect. And the people who don't deserve to be treated with respect doesn't mean you got to be jerks to them. Ignore those people. Just the way I'm going to continue to ignore the lunatic fringes who want to divide us. I'm not going to let us be divided by people who have no interest whatsoever in anything other than pushing out this toxic garbage that they end up benefiting from, usually financially, by the way. And that's the last rants.